Yes, so I'm just going to read out a few of the questions that get asked, just to give you a feeling of the sort of territory that the interest. So the first question that Ajita asks is, what is it that smothers the world? What makes the world so hard to see? What would you say pollutes the world, and what threatens it most? And then one of Tisa Matea's questions. Who in the world is happy? Is there anyone who isn't full of agitation? Who is there who isn't caught up in the patchwork world of greed? And then Punaka. You must explain this to me, Master, said Punaka. If all the sacrificial offerings of the experts couldn't get them beyond aging and birth, then who of all men, who of all the gods have ever managed to go beyond? Master, said Metagu, you are clearly a mind of full development, a master of knowledge. Where on earth do all the different kinds of suffering come from? How do wise men cross the ocean? How can they get beyond the aging process? How can they get beyond birth or sadness or sorrow? Many people talk of wise men, who they say are living in the world. What do you think about this? When they call someone wise, are they talking about their knowledge or about the way they live? And there's another question, Master. All religious teachers and Brahmins have talked about the way to be pure. Some have said that purity comes from world views and from teachings. Some have said it comes from good deeds and religious rituals. Others have said it comes from other things. Would you say, sir, that these men living in this world who've taught these things have gone beyond birth and aging? Before Gotama began to teach, all teachings I'd heard had only said, this is how things used to be, this is how they're going to be. Everything was based on tradition and hearsay, which just increased my doubts. So please now, wisdom master, explain to me the way you teach to put an end to craving. Explain to me the way you teach, which when a mindful living person knows it, releases his hold on the world. All-seeing Shakyam, said Tadeya, I want to know how to recognize a wise man when I see him. Sir, said Kappa, there are people stuck midstream in the terror and the fear of the rush of the river of being, and death and decay overwhelm them. For their sake, sir, tell me where to find an island. Tell me where there's solid ground beyond the reach of all this pain. Tell me this, what is the state of peace? Tell us about the way you have found and known. I want to ask you, Master of Shakya, Man of Shakya, about knowledge. If a man is no longer confined to seeing forms, if he has discarded materialist limitations, and he sees that there is neither inner nor outer substance to things, is there then anything more for him to know? So these are some of their questions, and I wonder if any of them bore any resemblance to the sort of questions that eventually brought us through the door of a Buddhist centre. You know, what were our unanswered questions that led us eventually to make contact with a centre such as this? So some of their questions reflect concerns arising from views and practices of the time, which won't have been part of our own conditioning. There was the one about making sacrificial offerings, for example. But there are others that give expression to universal concerns. How to get beyond sadness and sorrow? What's the nature of true happiness? How to recognise a wise person? What produces purity? The nature of peace and how to find it. So there were several questions. Each character asked the Buddha several questions. There's this dialogue. So we've just touched in a little bit on them. And apparently there's a later addition to the Pali Canon called the Chula Nidesha. I haven't actually looked up this text, but apparently this text is devoted to explaining in detail a number of the pithy and concise teachings that the Buddha gives in these dialogues. But we can perhaps see from the questions I've already read out that these guys are serious. I mean, you wouldn't walk 1,000 miles through difficult terrain if you weren't serious. They've been pursuing a spiritual life a long time. They're highly regarded teachers. They've got their own students. They're meditators. And they've quickly realized that the Buddha has discovered something they have not yet discovered. And they really want to go there, metaphorically speaking. And the Buddha realizes their seriousness. So these questions, they're not just idle questions. They're not just coming from a superficial layer of the mind. They reflect real concerns that they've been grappling with for years. And they've walked away from all the comforts of the priestly establishment. And the Buddha can see that seriousness, and he meets each one with clarity, directness, and naked honesty. So in one instance, the questioner puts his question to the Buddha 3 times. Now, traditionally, it's said that if a question is put 3 times, and at the 3rd asking, the Buddha will answer. And you might wonder, well, why doesn't the Buddha answer straight away? Well, usually it indicates that the answer is going to come as something of a spiritual shock to the listener. So the Buddha wants to be sure that they really do want to hear an answer, that this is a real question for them and they're really ready to hear what he's going to say. So our questioner is Mogaraja, and we've already been told he's learned. So let's hear his question, which he's now asking the Buddha for the 3rd time. I do not know, famous Gotama, what attitude you take towards this world and towards the other world, the world of Brahma with its devas or gods. So because of your insight into excellence, I've come to ask you about this. What is the best way for a person to regard the world so that the king of death won't see him? Death was personified as Mara, the word literally meaning killer. So here is Mogaraja giving voice to the classic concern of the Brahmana. How do I escape death? How do I escape death after death after death? Is there some way I can free myself from this world and find release into the other world of Brahma and never have to undergo death again? And the Buddha replies, if you are always aware, Mogaraja, you will look at the world and see its emptiness. If you give up looking at yourself as a fixed and special identity, then you will have given yourself away beyond death. Look at the world like this, and the king of death will not see you. And here's Tanissaro Bhikkhu's translation, which is slightly different. View the world, Mogaraja, as void. Always mindful to have removed any view about self. This way, one is above and beyond death. This is how one views the world so as not to be seen by death's king. So view the world, Mogaraja, as void, always mindful to have removed any view about self. This way one is above and beyond death. This is how one views the world so as not to be seen by death's king. So we can perhaps see why the Buddha didn't answer Mogaraja straight away. Because we're plunged here into the truth of the non-selfhood, nairatmya, of all elements of existence. The Brahminical conception of the eternal, unchanging self, the Atman, is just that, a conception. It doesn't accord with the way things are. There is no such self. And as for speaking in terms of a world, whether this world or the world of Brahma or any other world for that matter, the Buddha says all these worlds are entirely devoid of substantial existence. Well, I hardly need to point out that it isn't just Brahmins who fall prey to the view of there being some kind of self independent of the flow of experience, and some kind of world independent of the flow of experience. When the Buddha speaks of world here and elsewhere in the text, it's not to be understood in the way we commonly think of it. World is regarded as part and parcel of the five aggregates or heaps, khandhas, of form, feeling, perception, volition, and consciousness. So these five heaps or groups represent congeries of related processes, and between them they comprise the whole of our subjective and objective experience. And as the later Mahayana Sutta that many of us are familiar with says, the Bodhisattva of compassion, when he meditated deeply, saw the emptiness of all five skandhas and sundered the bonds that caused him suffering. But this isn't an emptiness in the sense that there's nothing here. It's more that we're misled by our senses and have mistaken conceptions about ourselves and the world. What we commonly take to be self and world has no abiding substance standing apart from and independent of the continually flowing, conditioned nature of phenomena. And we're reaching here the limits of language. What's happening in reality is entirely ungraspable and unknowable by the rational mind. It's ineffable, it's mysterious, it's beyond, as in the title of the whole chapter, Beyond with a capital B, beyond perception, beyond conception. The Buddha's response to the various questions put to him by Bhavari's students come from the beyond and point us to the beyond, which is why in the epilogue of the Pariyana we're told, anyone whose life accords with what the Buddha taught in these answers goes across the ocean of samsara, from here to the beyond, from this shore to the other. This is crossing the ocean. This is travelling on the highest path. That is why it is called Pariyana, the way to the beyond. And we're told that all 16 of the Brahmins became disciples of the Buddha and made very good progress on the path. In the words of the text, they settled down to a life of purity and goodness, spent in the shelter of the precious wisdom of the Buddha. And some of them decided to stay living close to the Buddha, to sort of follow him as he moved around. And others eventually returned. They made that long journey back to the region they'd come from. And perhaps Pingya was the first to make that long journey back. For in the last section of the Pariyana, we listen in, as it were, on the conversation he has with his old teacher, Bhavari, as he shares with him his impression of the Buddha and the impact their meeting has had upon him. And tradition has it that those of the ascetics who did return founded one of the first Buddhist communities in the Aurangabad region of what is now modern-day Maharashtra. So next week at the class, we'll be hearing this last section and have a more meditative devotional program for the evening. And I hope what I've told you this evening has got you curious to find out more about these dialogues, or has perhaps reawakened your interest in them if you read them many years ago. But whether it's this canonical text or another, all the Buddha Dharma concerns the way to the beyond. So we're going to end with hearing the first part of Dōtika's dialogue with the Buddha. O Blessed One, I so much want to hear you speak. Please, great seer, explain to me. Can a student of your teaching find the calm of Nibbana for himself? Any student of my teaching, said the Buddha, who is ardent, intelligent and mindful, here and now, can find the calm of Nibbana for himself. I can see now, said Dōtika, that there is in this world a man who has nothing, a Brahmin, a wanderer. I bow down and honour you, the eye that sees everything. Please, O Shakyan, free me from my doubt. No one in the world, Dōtika, can I release from doubting. When you have understood for yourself the most excellent Dharma, then you will cross over the ocean of samsara.